Welcome to Victoria Rumble Room, our special Christmas show. This is our Christmas show. We're the show that isn't afraid to say Merry Christmas. That's right. We actually think Christmas is a great thing. And I'm Robin Adair. Along with me, as always, my festive co-host with the most, John Jurisic, and season's greetings, Johnny.
Season's greetings to you. Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays to you. Whatever the hell we got to say, it's a good time to be alive, a good time to celebrate life, a good time to be with our families. Call it what you want. And it's a great show to have a fun time. That's what we do. I'm just, you know, and special guests might be coming up in a few minutes. Well, maybe I hear more.
He's on the roof, I think,
he's
John.
He's on the roof. Special guest we'll have from the North Pole will be reviewing his naughty and nice list with us. But first, a special Rumble Room presentation.
Well, a special presentation, John, in the sense that we thought, what would be a nice thing to do for Christmas? Mm-hmm. And we thought, well, maybe we should run one of the interviews that we've done this year that we think was particularly fun. Uplifting. And this, of course, was our interview with Dave Dorgie, who is the co-author of a new book, 111 Places in Victoria That You Must Not Miss. And it's a great sort of win-win here because it's a lot of fun. Dave Dorgie is a lot of fun.
So fun doing that interview.
And we had technical issues. We had technical issues the week we did that show. And so a lot of our viewers didn't get a chance to see it. We had calls from viewers saying, where's your show this week? What's going on? So we have scuttled around and we said, okay, well, this is a way we can celebrate Christmas with some enthusiasm with a guy who's very enthusiastic, Dave Dorgie. So he's back with us again. Ho, ho, ho. Let's zoom him in. And now, joining us in the Victoria Rumble Room for the very first time is the co-author of 111 Places in Victoria That You Must Not Miss, Mr. Dave Dorgie. And Dave, I should preface this whole interview by saying that you and I go back over 40 years. It's
a long time ago that we were at
BCIT and broadcasting together. And back in those days, it's so long ago, even Brian Antonsen was young. He was our early instructor, and he's a big fan of this show. I'm sure he'll be stunned to see the two of us still on the air and looking, relatively healthy.
Well, it is 40 years, and I wonder if your co-host John was even born. We're talking about how we're both older than him. I mean, that's 40 years ago is a long time ago, John.
Well, apparently, I did have more hair, and I don't, and you do.
I've got no shortage of it. I find that in my mid-60s, it grows like weeds. You got enough seeds there to get it going.
Yeah. I think John was in reform school, honestly. But, you know, I should preface in our introduction to have Dave Dorgie on the show, that Dave has a long background after broadcasting in sports marketing, very strongly involved in sports. And the Olympic Games was a very, very big place in Dave's resume, as he was involved in a number of Olympic committees in Salt Lake City, Vancouver, of course, and London. And a long and fascinating career. So great to have you on the show.
Thanks, Robin. And we're old buds, go back a long ways. It's great to meet John, too. So this is going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Fabulous.
A wonderful book you've written, and a lot of fun to go through it. A book that you wrote with Graham Menzies. He's your co-author. Yes. And it's not your first book. It's the third in this series. You've already written 111 Places That You Cannot Miss in Vancouver, and then you followed up with 111 Places in Whistler. So now it's Victoria. Why Victoria? What was the prep and the work that went into this and collecting the stories that had to go along with these 111 recommendations?
Well, first of all, to back up a little bit, it's a series of books published by a German company called Emmons, and it would be a series of guidebooks. So they have 111 New York, they have 111 Miami, Paris, Rome, Vietnam, whatever, all over the world. And they asked us to do the Vancouver book, Graham Menzies and I, for four years ago. It takes about a year to write a book like that. We did the research, the photography, and we're both frustrated writers. We both were getting you know, manuscripts into publishing companies and stuff wasn't really happening. And so when an offer came to write a legit book 4 years ago for Vancouver, we did it. It was a success. It's just gone into its third printing, the Vancouver book, and it's been translated into German and it's selling. And so they said, do another book. The Whistler book was a ton of fun. And I spend about half my time in Victoria. My partner Jeannie's in Victoria. I live in a floating home on the Ladner in Ladner. And then I spend time in Mitchelton with her. And my sports marketing background began in Victoria. For 3 years, I worked full time at the Commonwealth Games in 94. So Victoria is my second home. And I feel like I know it well. And the book was a ton of fun to research and write. And it's our baby. It's just been born. It's like, it takes about a year to make one of these. It takes 9 months to give birth or to the gestation period of a child. The gestation period of a book is about a year, working pretty hard and hitting deadlines and rewrites and working with editors and publishers. And we're really proud of it. It's got lots of nice color pictures in it. Yeah.
Welcome, Dave, to the Victoria Rumble Room.
Rumble on.
Quite fascinating, the interlocking worlds for all of us. Robin's been sports, a reporter. No sports very well here. You're marketing. I worked with Hugh McDonald in Sport Host.
Good heavens. Hugh and I worked very closely on the, Commonwealth Games. I think he was with CPR at the time.
I saw him yesterday at Save on Foods. He's still kicking around. Nonetheless, that's another day.
Really liked him. Wow, cool.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I love the fact that you have fascinating stories to attach to the landmarks. I mean, it's great to say, hey, here's something that perhaps someone hasn't seen, but then there's a story making it even more robust. And, you know, there are stories here that I've not even heard, and I've been around Victoria for quite a while. Why don't we dig into some of those stories? Okay. Give us some background. I found the Haunted Loo of the 111 places. Is that a toilet or what's
it's
going
a, it's,
on?
It is a washroom at a pub, and that is one chapter that Graham wrote, my writing partner. And you might just have to buy the book to find out more about that. But the publishers that have done a number of they're in Germany, as I mentioned, they've mainly done European titles. So they've done Frankfurt and Munich and Paris. And when they hired us 4 years ago, they said, you know, we want quirky, unusual stories no one knows about. And we submitted a 50 chapter ideas, and they came back and they said, these are great. But in every book we've done, we have done something about a urinal. we want a story on a Victoria urinal. In Vancouver, we found one. We found a twin urinal that was built in 1874 that when you urinate, you look at each other. It's in the bottom of the Heritage Building at 16th and Main in Vancouver. And this one in Victoria, although it's not a well-known story, it is a haunted urinal. And it is in the JBI pub, the Haunted Loo at the JBI pub. The backstory goes back to the 1940s, ghosts and goblins, and involves Emily Carr and involves a whole bunch of ins and out in the Hudson's Bay Company. I didn't write the story. Graham Menzies is a fantastic historian and author, and that one is his. But the publishers, they want quirky, unusual things no one knows about. And the Haunted Loo at the JBI pub is worth a read and worth going to. If you have to go to the bathroom anyways, why not go in there and soak up the history and learn more about it while you're in there? There is some signage there that alludes to it when you're in the pub.
And maybe meet Emily Carr. Wonderful stories about better known attractions as well. You've got Bouchard Gardens, Rogers Chocolates, the world's largest totem pole, which of course resides out at Beacon Hill Park. Many people in the community know about these places, but you sound like you found unusual stories about some of these better known landmarks. Do you want to share one of them?
Well, I would say that the totem pole is great, but anytime you and the publishers also like the world's biggest, world's smallest, world's longest. Anytime you make a claim like that, it's up for disputes. And the story about the totem pole is there is a taller totem pole up island, but the one in Beacon Hill Park is the tallest freestanding without guide wires. So I go into a lengthy explanation of what constitutes the world's largest, because there is a larger one that exists. And Then the fact is totem poles only live 50 or 75 years. They're made out of wood and they have to be refurbished and taken down for reconstructive purposes and engineering. And the story goes into the claim that it's the largest and the degree of maintenance required. So again, a quirky piece of background information that you might not know about.
Dave, was it tough to choose what to include, what to pass on? Did it have a lot to do with finding the colorful stories? For example, let me give you a few. You include the BC Archives, but not the BC Museum. Hatley Castle, but not Craig Derrick. Was it hard to decide? Like a place like the Legislative Dining Room? Did it better lend itself to a great story? I'm sure there are so many down there.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we could have done 222 or 333 places on Victoria. I mean, it really was an editing job as to what you want to take out. And the ethos of the book is not to talk about Butchart Gardens in the familiar sense of a map and you know laying out what people already know, but finding some quirky little thing that nobody has ever heard of and then really talking about that. So it's a guidebook that's, it wouldn't be like, if you're a tourist to Victoria, you should buy it as your second guidebook. You should buy another guidebook, and this is the second one that fills in the backstory on weird things.
Now, you really do get off the beaten trail a few times in this book, which is quite interesting. A lot of people wouldn't think, gee, I really think a great place to go with the family would be to go to check out William Head Penitentiary or, you know, the Sidewalk of Sorrow. I wonder what that's about. Now, the Lego Hotel, the kids might like that if they can find it, but I can't imagine there's huge tour groups going to check out David Foster's childhood home. However, these are all listed. How did you find stories for these things?
Well, you know, you and I have been around for so long, and David Foster was a huge star. You know, it's cool to know that he came from Victoria, but where in Victoria? And it's really easy for one of your viewers to pick up a copy of the book. We got the address. Go buy the house. There's an anecdotal, sort of recollection of his childhood and the bedroom where he had the piano. And it's really, really cool. So that was the mandate, to get a book that locals would love because it gives them information they don't have, that tourists would pick up and get more out of a trip because it's quirky and weird and off the beaten path.
Yeah. How about the penitentiary?
Well, the penitentiary, I mean, you know, the nickname Club Fed, I mean, what a great name, you know, taking off on Club Med. But that's some of the most beautiful real estate in Western Canada out there, you know, in the points of Metchosin. And I've been there. So we're going there soon for a play. I mean, I go there every year when they open it up for a theater production. I'm really interested in it, but I'm interested in why is it there? And when land was cheap, and it was a place where, it was a hospital where people were brought sick and infirmed, and it was a quarantine area. People were quarantined there in the 1880s. And that led to it being another institution and eventually a prison. But it's worth the drive. I mean, that one, it's hard to get into. Ha, ha, ha. But it's worth the drive out there.
And I could have given you a good story from William Head, and you're going to go see a play. There was a performance of a number of years ago of Macbeth. And they actually walked out and they had a coffin, which the king was supposed to be placed in. And then they took the coffin off stage and two guys took the coffin, went out and used it to escape from the prison. They were rowing themselves out and they didn't realize that the water didn't flow into the beach. It flowed out into the bay. And they were saved by the Coast Guard because they were stranded out there. And for the rest of the productions, they had to drill holes in the casket, so it couldn't be taken for that use.
I wish that I had had that for the book. That would be a great paragraph when you're talking about this penitentiary. And it is, although not on the tourist attraction map, it's worth the drive, and it's a cool story. I mean, houses down the way, there was one listed for $15 million, a waterfront home. And I don't think there's a prison anywhere in North America that would be next door to such a lavish upscale neighborhood. They're usually out in the middle of nowhere in a desert, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, I also have a penitentiary story. My son played softball on a team that played the prison team. And so I'm sitting on the benches watching this, feeling a tad bit uncomfortable because I'm surrounded by prisoners. And the fellow who sat right beside me was a very famous bank robber. And then wrote a book about it. And he sits beside me and proceeds to spend the entire game talking to me. and I'm getting increasingly more uncomfortable. And then at the end wants to get my contact information. I'd rather read about it in your book. Nonetheless, here we go.
That's a great story too.
So likely unaware from our close to now, well, over 1.4 cumulative, 1.4, I keep saying Robin Roy, 1.4 million cumulative viewers of the show, they likely are not thinking that I'm an avid bicyclist. I bike as much as I can. I clearly like to eat as much as I can. But nonetheless, I was so pleased to see that you included the Galloping Goose Trail in your recommendations. I understand you are a major cyclist yourself. Have you actually ridden up to some of the places you reference, like the Malahat Skywalk, a Goldstream Park, Fisgard Lighthouse, to do your research?
Yeah, rode my bike to pretty much all of those places. And I think another story, John, is about the bicycle counting machines in Victoria. When you cycle through Victoria, there's counters everywhere that digitally. And I wrote a story about that. And Victoria is rated as the number one cycling city in North America. I think it's a real estate company, Redfin, or some real estate company that, you know, worries about this kind of stuff. And, you know, it just is so wonderful. The Galloping Goose is quite flat because it used to be the railway. The Lochside Trail is absolutely gorgeous. So in our Vancouver book, A Great Cycling Path is the Seawall. In our Whistler book, The Valley Trail, and the Victoria's got the Galloping Goose, which I think is some of the best cycling, and the Lochside Trail. And I've cycled them all. You know, I love cycling in Victoria.
You know, it's really cool how you found so many unexpected places. And we could just talk about that, I think, in the entire interview. We have, for example, and I think you actually placed the head on top of a body that was standing in front of the gates, but you have Prince Harry standing in front of the gates of the house out in North Saanich, where he and Meghan Markle holed up for a while in Saanich while they were deciding whether they're going to stay in Canada before they blasted off for Hollywood. And I don't know if it was fame or infamy once they went to Hollywood, but anyway, they were in Saanich for a while, and you actually show the house and talk about the fact that that was the great escape for Prince Harry. And you also talk about the 1994 Commonwealth Games, which you referenced at the beginning of our discussion. I was a TV reporter at that time, and you talk about a missing Inner Harbor stage. I don't have any recollection of that. And you've got a story attached to that as well.
Well, just really quick, I'll comment on both of them because they're interesting. So really quickly, the Prince Harry one, you know, and that whole thing. But that was short. It only happened in Victoria for a couple of months, but it was intense. Mm-hmm. Paparazzi was there. The world were watching when they hit out there. And, you know, we couldn't get inside of the gates, you know, to photograph it properly or on the beach, you know. So we were restricted to the entrance. And we got a fake Harry mask and put it on and took the picture. But while we were there, some neighbors were walking by and they said, yeah, it was really interesting to live here at the time. You know, people were camped out and there were satellite feeds coming in and out and helicopters. And, you know, many people might wonder, where is that house? Well, it's really easy to get to when you drive off the ferry. It's less than a 3 or 4 minute diversion. Why not go have a look, you know? So that was a fun one. But the Commonwealth Games, I mean, what an amazing event. I love the Commonwealth Games, the friendly games. They're the right size. They're less political. They're the true spirit of sport. And in my intro, you mentioned that I've spent a significant amount of time working on Olympic Games around the world. But I cut my teeth on the Commonwealth Games in Victoria in 94. And just really quickly, there's two aspects to games from my point of view. There's bids, where you go to win the game. You make promises to the governing bodies that we're going to hold the games here. And then once you win them, you execute them. So they're different committees, different dynamics. I've worked on both. I worked on the Vancouver Olympic bid, and I worked on the London Olympic bid, as you mentioned. But the Victoria bid, we were bidding against Cardiff, Wales, and New Delhi, India. I don't know if you remember that. But that it was a big deal. If you want to hold the Commonwealth Games, you present your proposal to the Commonwealth Games Society. They vote, and Cardiff has a good proposal. New Delhi has a good proposal. They want it. We want an edge to win it. So the proposal stated that every night we're going to bring all the people that won medals from all the different events together in the Inner Harbor. There's going to be scaffolding built up around the Empress Hotel in front of the legislative buildings, you know, for seating. See 20 or 30,000 people there. I mean, you know, that's a big area. and we're going to have a floating stage where we'll present the medals. So, and that was the presentation that helped us win. Now, I wasn't involved in the bid. I was only involved in the games, but I read all the documents. When I got involved in the organizing committee, it was reviewed, all the costs to do this. And at one point, we said, whoa, we can't afford to do this. It's too expensive. Now, there were no repercussions. They're not going to take the games away from you. But it's a very little known fact that nobody would know about it unless you had worked on the games like me. And the games were a huge success. No one missed the floating stage. But that's the first chapter in the book. There is a lovely plaque down there in the on the causeway that has the 44 or 45 flags of the Commonwealth and the logo. And I write a story about, you know, the stage that never was. But, oh, you got the Saanich Pool and you've got the cycling velodrome and a lot of other wonderful legacies left behind. Yeah.
And I just want to touch on that a little bit more before we let you go, Dave. The Commonwealth Games, of course, a huge legacy for Victoria. And since that time, we haven't really seen Commonwealth Games much in this country. They tried a few years ago in Halifax. There was a bid, but they withdrew. And I think it went to Edinburgh instead at the end. And the question I have is it getting so expensive now to run a games like the Commonwealth Games, even let alone the Olympics, that a city the size of Victoria can no longer manage it?
You know, Robin, it really is. And the next Commonwealth Games are supposed to take place in the Gold Coast, Australia, I believe in 28. And they won them, and they're halfway through organizing them, and they gave them back. They said that we, you know, we can't afford to execute it and to continue, which is really frightening when that happens. And then I got a call a couple of months ago. Alberta was bidding for was considering a bid for 32, the 32 games, I believe. I might be getting my dates wrong, but it was going to be a joint bid between Calgary and Edmonton. And the reporter from the TV station there called me up to do an interview. And the number was $1.8 billion, which would the province decided not. They didn't pull out of the bid. They decided not to bid, which is different. And I just said to the reporter, I said, those are Olympic sized budgets. And is it necessary to rebuild everything? Why can't we stage the games in a more modest fashion, not have to build these mega theaters for sports, and choose cities like Vancouver to do the Olympics again at, you know? So I think that under the current model of the spending that takes place in these massive budgets, yes, Victoria is being outpaced and cannot afford it. But I question how the Commonwealth Games are going to continue when they've a gut punch of somebody giving the games back and nobody stepping up for the games after that. You know, it's the golden years of bidding for multi events and huge budgets are, I think, behind us. You know, I'm sad to say that.
But all the money that people save, now they can go out and buy your book. That's the good news. And we're getting close to Christmas. It's on sale at Victoria bookstores far and wide across the province. And it's even on Amazon. You can have one of those Amazon trucks drive up to your place and dump off your books.
You know, you and I learned promotion back at BCIT, back in shameless self-promotion. And I don't mind saying that in bookstores now, available wherever fine books are sold for $29.95.
You could be doing one of those 500 funny car commercials or something.
64 funny cars.
Yeah. 101 funny cars.
The raceways out in Victoria. Is it Western Raceways? Western Speedway. I thought that would be a great story. Went out there, started doing the research, compiled it, and then, oh, we're shutting down. Oh, okay. We had quite a few of those places that were going to shut down or did shut down because, you know, tail end of COVID. Yeah.
Santa Claus, it's so good to have you here. And I understand, Santa, a special for the Rumble Room. You've brought in your top picks for the year, both plus and minus, I guess.
You bet. Let me check my notes. Robin from the Rumble Room. Of course, you're always naughty, but maybe we won't say that too publicly. And would be number one on anybody's naughty list. But let's freshen things up here a little bit. Here are my three top beefs. And my number one, Golden Star. Hold on, Prancer. Just wait a minute. Let me get this all taken care of here. Number one is people who block highways as a form of protest. How can I possibly move my sleigh through a bunch of people blocking the road. It's dangerous and doesn't draw beans in terms of public opinion. So, big lump of coal for the blocking highway folks. Anyone who call number two? I'm a little bit, you know, busy, so I forget how to form sentences here.
It's anyway. A lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure being, the man who has to go around the world once a year and give every child in the world a gift.
Yeah, and, you know, come on to the number one broadcast in the world. Anyway, number two beef. Anyone who calls average Canadian settlers and colonists my family, and millions of families have come to this country over the last 500 years to build a better life.
Or in your case, thousands of years.
Forever, yes. In a very cold climate. They've worked very hard to create a great nation. Not perfect. I myself am not perfect, although I like to think I am.
Oh, no, don't ever say that, Santa.
But Canada gets a great big star from me. And those who call Canada a so-called country barely rate a lump of coal. I have to remember this is a PG-rated show. Number three, beef.
This is the conclusion. This is the number one beef you have, right? Number three is the number one beef?
Yes, that's how it goes, I think, doesn't it?
I don't know. It's hard to know. It's hard to keep track, Santa.
It's hard with so much presents and reindeer and snow and liquor and food. Oh, sorry. I don't want to say that. People who make fun of electric bikes, go home. Believe me, electric bikes rock. And next Christmas, I just may leave my reindeer at home and get on my electric bike to deliver gifts in record time.
I think we'd all like to see that, Santa. It could be fun to watch you on an electric bike trying to get across, say, the Atlantic Ocean, for example. Anyway, you also have top pick on the other side of the scale, the number one thing that you're happy about as we move into this Christmas season. As we've said, this is a positive, uplifting Christmas message. Let's have it, Santa.
All right, you bet. And this truly is my number one golden star. And it goes to people and folks who give their time and effort to others without expecting anything in return. A rare gift in today's society, but a ton of people are doing it. And you all get my number one gold star. We keep hearing in the news about bad things happening. And as I travel around the world, I can see it and hear it. But you know what? The real story is that a ton of people do care. They don't get coverage, not just at Christmas, but all year wrong. All year long.
You may get a little coal yourself after this show there, Santa. One more positive note from Santa Claus to our viewers, and to all our viewers, a very Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, and so glad you could join us in another Rumble Room.
That's fabulous, Robin. And remember, when I'm not saying ho, 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 you'll hear me on the rooftop shouting, Rumble on! I would like to do Santa on.